This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the program, Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Big Daddy Ezzy Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The NHL draft is coming up later this month. We're going to start our look at some of the draft eligible prospects by being joined by Guy Flaming of the Pipeline Show. He covers the Western Hockey League top to bottom. He's our number one Western Hockey League resource. Guy, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, fellas. Glad to be back on the show again.
And our pleasure to have you, Guy, as we talk about the Western Hockey League and a bit of a down year for the Western Hockey League when it comes to sort of those top flight prospects for the draft upcoming in Dallas later on this month. Guy, why is that? Just one of those sort of the life cycle where this happens to be a bit of a down year for the Western Hockey League?
Yeah, it really is. In fact, it's kind of amplified. I think it's right across the Canadian Hockey League, as a matter of fact. It's not a great year for the OHL either, and the Q is kind of an average year at best. It happens to be a really strong year for Europeans and for the U.S. National Development Program, so you add those two things together and it amplifies. It looks really bad for the WHL. It's a below average year, there's no question about that, but it's not going to last. The next year it will be a strong one for the WHL, so things get back to normal next year.
Guy, the top-ranked Western Hockey League player is defenseman Ty Smith of the Spokane Chiefs. A bit more than a point a game for Spokane this year, 73 points in 69 games played. His skating has been described as tremendous, and he's sort of one of those a new-age defender, if you want to put that in quotes. In your opinion, what is his ceiling as an NHL player?
Well, I think it's because of how smart he is and how well he skates and moves with the puck and transports the puck. That's the new buzzword. But his hockey IQ is what separates him, I think. And he's able to do all of that at a pretty decent speed, as you said. His skating is really strong. So I think he can be a guy who controls the power play. I don't think he's tremendously overpowering with his shot. I don't know that he's going to be the trigger guy on a power play, but I think he can run a power play opportunity for a team. So I see him being that type of a guy. The only bit of a red flag for me with Ty Smith was after, as you pointed out, more than a point per game this year, had no points for Canada at the World U18. And I know I didn't see the tournament that much, but when I asked him about that, it did bother him as well that after such a strong season in Spokane, kind of laid a bit of an egg in Russia while playing for Canada.
Guy, defenseman Alexander Alexeyev of Brent Sutter's Red Deer Rebels is the next highest-rated WHL prospect. He had 37 points in 45 games. He's projected to go somewhere late first round or early second round, but he's missed a lot of games over the last couple of years. He's actually missed 58 games. Are NHL teams scared off by a guy like Alexeyev who's missed so much hockey?
Well, in this case, a bit different because it wasn't all due to injury. He actually lost one of his parents. I think it was mother that died. And so he was hurt for a bit at the start of the year, but then missed most of the second half of the season because of that. So it's a little bit different than a guy who maybe blows out his knee or something and he misses half the year. I think it's a less of a concern for him. And I think there's lots to like about Alexeyev. He seems to be, I wouldn't say he's a physical sense in that he's putting guys through the boards, but he's a battler in front of the net and in the corner. He's a big body and tough to fight against if you're a forward trying to win those puck battles in the corner.
You know, Guy, we got to ask you about a Winnipegger and probably has the most fun name to say, Jet Wu, the Moose Jaw Warriors defenseman. He might not project as a high-scoring defenseman at the NHL level, but do you think his speed, his high hockey IQ, and his power will appeal to teams looking for a future shutdown defenseman?
I really do, and here's a case where injury, I think, did hurt him because he didn't play all that much, just about a little over half of a season with the Moose Jaw Warriors, and didn't have tremendous numbers this year. I think that will weigh on him, although when you look at it, 25 points in 44 games isn't all that bad. I think if he would have played a full year, he might have had 50 or 60 points. I actually think this is a guy who might be under the radar a little bit. I think his skating is tremendous, and I think as a late round pick, he could be a bit of a steal.
Guy Flaming is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Guy is with the Pipeline Show discussing Western Hockey League prospects for the upcoming NHL draft later on this month in Dallas, Texas. Guy, the Regina Pats had that great run to the Memorial Cup final that, of course, fell a little bit short last Sunday against Acadie Bathurst. Max Paddock was the backstop for the Regina Pats. Injured for the majority of the second half, comes back for the Memorial Cup playoffs, leads the Regina Pats all the way to the championship game. How much did Max Paddock's draft stock increase as a result of his performance during the 2018 Memorial Cup?
But you have to think that it did, don't you? I mean, there will be people who say real small sample size, can't judge too much on that. But, you know, when he goes into the tournament ranked number 22 in North America by Central Scouting, and now they don't look at the playoffs and the World U18 and the Memorial Cup and the Combine when they, because their final ranking is right at the end of the regular season. And I think that's a bit of a mistake. I understand why they do it, because they want to have everybody on the same playing field, so they only look at regular season. But, you know, I think he's no longer the 22nd guy in North America, put it that way. How do you look past what he did? That final game, Regina comes out, basically is outplayed drastically in the first 35 minutes of that game, and he was the only reason that the Pats even had a chance to come back. And, you know, he had a couple of average games, one where he really struggled in the Memorial Cup, but outside of that, he was tremendous. I think he caught a lot of attention for his performance there.
Guy, from one Brandon native to another, defenseman Kalen Addison of the Lethbridge Hurricanes, he was almost a point-per-game player this year. He's projected again to be kind of in that late first-round, early second-round range. What would you say are his greatest strengths, and what does he need to work on before he makes it to the NHL level?
Well, definitely has to work on his own end, his defensive coverage and playing that position a bit stronger from a defensive perspective. That would be his weakness, but I really like everything else about Kalen Addison. Helps also that he's a right-handed shot, but really good offensive numbers. Very similar to me, like Ty Smith, except he's a right-handed defenseman and probably not as good defensively as Smith is. But I think there's a lot of upside to him if he can shore up his coverage in his own end. That will go a long way. But I think if there's a team that misses out on a defenseman in round one and he's still there for them in round two, I wouldn't hesitate at all. I think Kalen Addison is a terrific player. And I've seen, I get to see these players as they come through. And this year, they get to beat up on the Edmonton All Kings because they were, you know, finished in last place this year. I saw Kalen Addison have a 5-point night against the All Kings here in Edmonton. This is a player who caught my attention a lot.
Guy, I'm apparently asking about the Winnipeggers today, so I'm going to go to Riley Stoats. And, you know, he started off the season with the Swift Current Broncos, but was traded to Calgary in November. Despite being on a weaker team, he finished the season eighth amongst first-year WHL draft-eligible players in even-strength primary points. Could Stoats be a hidden gem coming out of the WHL?
I think so. This is a guy whose motor never stops, and that's the thing I like about him the most, probably, is he's got a tenacious attitude about him. He's average size, but he's really quick and in your face right away. Puck pursuit for him is really strong, and he's got some offensive ability for sure. As you pointed out, he goes from Swift Current, where he was, you know, playing on a WHL and CHL contending team, so he's further down the depth chart of where he probably deserved to be. He goes to Calgary, and suddenly he's one of the top guys on the club, and that offense comes through for him and became one of their go-to guys. I actually quite like Riley Stoats, and I think he could be, because of where he was at the start of the year, maybe under the radar a bit, and could be a second or third round steal.
Guy Flaming is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Guy is the host of the Pipeline Show, covers WHL. We're talking about draft-eligible prospects for the upcoming NHL draft in Dallas. Guy, most of the guys we're talking to you about so far, this is their first year of draft eligibility. A sort of a unique case is Christian Reichel of the Red Deer Rebels, son of former NHLer Robert Reichel. He's 19 years old. This is his third year of draft eligibility. In fact, actually attended Winnipeg Jets prospect camp back in 2017. A lot of people have Reichel as sort of a fourth or fifth round pick. Do you think that that's sort of where you'd expect him to go? Is he too big of a gamble in the NHL draft? Or do you think he still can be a productive player at the NHL level?
Well, 34, what do you have? 34, 35 goals, something like that,
yeah,
this year. I think that will help him get drafted. But you make a good point. I mean, he's 19. He didn't blow the doors off of the WHL this year, and I think they probably expected a bit more from him. But maybe, I mean, Red Deer, the Rebels, struggled for much of the season as well before really turning it on in the second half of the year. But, you know, I think Reichel will get drafted. I'd be surprised if he doesn't. But, yeah, fifth, sixth round probably sounds right to me.
Gee, the next player we want to ask you about is center Kyle Topping of the Kelowna Rockets. He put up really good numbers with the Rockets this year, playing on a line with NHL prospects Dylan Dubé and Cole Lynn. Some scouts believe, though, that those numbers are inflated. In your opinion, what does Topping project to at the NHL level?
I had him on the show very, very recently, and I was actually pretty impressed with the way he kind of looked at the season, and I asked him flat out basically about his line mates, and I think it takes a talented player to play with good players. So, yeah, sure, he might have been the third guy on that line, and the other two did the bulk of the damage, but I take nothing away from Kyle Topping. I'll be interested to see how he follows this season up next year when the Rockets will take a bit of a hit in their personnel and get a bit younger. But how do you take away anything from what he did? I think you have to look at and appreciate the production that he had because, I mean, 65 points in 66 games, that's pretty impressive. And the best part of that, this is a guy who was 11th round pick in the WHL Bantam draft. And I know he was playing on the island, and it might be when he was a kid in his Bantam draft season, but he had 225 points or something that year in it was just ridiculous numbers. So I think the offense is there. May have been flying under the radar at that point in his career, but I think he's proven that he's a guy you can look to for offense at least the WHL level. We'll see what he does this coming season.
E. Riley Sutter, son of Ron Sutter, had a good playoffs for the Everett Silvertips, but some scouts have concerns with his skating, while others think he has limited offensive upside. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, for me, he's a power forward who might be, I don't think you're projecting him as a top two-line kind of guy, more of a bottom six pair, a bottom six power forward, rather. And I agree. I think his skating is just average. He does have some hands, though. He did score 25 goals this year, so I think you have to take notice of that. And as you pointed out, when it comes to crunch time and in the playoffs, he was one of Everett's better players. So I think you take all of that into consideration, and you also know when you draft a Sutter, and that name bar carries a lot of weight, but you also know that he's sort of got work ethic ingrained in what he does every day. So there's a bit of a you're not as concerned about, well, is this guy going to bring it every day, or what's he going to do off the ice? There's less concern with that because, you know, it's sort of ingrained in him. But overall, I think he's kind of an average player, so I would expect more of a middle round sort of a pick for Riley Sutter.
Gee, always appreciate your time. We'll let you go on this last question. You know, in your duties with your color analysis on Oil Kings broadcast and your work with the Pipeline show, you see basically all the Western Hockey League players. You're so up to speed on the Western Hockey League. Is there one guy in particular who's draft eligible this year who really isn't getting a lot of buzz that jumped out to you as somebody that you were really interested in, or you really appreciated their game in the course of watching them over the last year or 2 years?
Well, when I get asked that, Riley Stotts is kind of the guy that I've been offering up as of late, but you guys asked me about him. I'll give a bit of a shout-out to an Oil King, actually. Brett Kemp, I thought, had a bit of an inconsistent year, but a lot of guys at this age do that. When he's on his game, boy, he can attack guys one-on-one. He's not small. I mean, he's 6 foot and still has room to fill out on his frame, but there's some offensive creativity and talent there. Probably a later pick, but that's kind of what you're asking me about, maybe a sixth or a seventh round guy. But I'll go with Brett Kemp of the Edmonton Oil Kings.
There you have it. Guy Flaming is the host of the Pipeline Show, also a color analyst on Edmonton Oil Kings broadcast on her sister station, TSN 1260. Guy, always appreciate your insight, always appreciate your time into the Western Hockey League. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Call me anytime, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Guy. Thanks again.
Thanks, Guy.
When we come back, we shift our focus back to the NHL. Going to spend some time apparently discussing the bad blood that exists between Phil Kessel and Mike Sullivan. Could Kessel be on his way out of Pittsburgh? We talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
It's not.
not going away. This Phil Kessel noise is not going away. And I talked to a friend of mine that runs a team, and he says there's a lot of fire out, or there's, sorry, there's a lot of smoke out there about him, but he doesn't know of any deal that's imminent.
Pierre McGuire on our sister station, TSN 690, talking about the rumors surrounding Phil Kessel and his potential departure from the Pittsburgh Penguins. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you love Bernstein's Deli as much as we do, show them some love. Head to TripAdvisor, leave them a 5-star review, because Bernstein's Deli deserves it for the great food, the great service, the great everything they produce for you. Bernsteinsdeli.com for more information.
I'm telling you right now, the Illegal Curve Sandwich is a 10-star sandwich.
Wow. 10 stars.
Yes.
Not just 5, 10.
Well, actually, the first whole food that Baby Ariella is going to eat is an Illegal Curve sandwich.
They've just blended it up into a milkshake
sort of
for her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Drew, you would know this. Newborns feed a lot during the first week.
Yeah, I'm not the only one who knows that. I think most everybody knows that. But yes,
lots of breast milk.
Honest to God.
Ezzy actually used some of his coffee.
I know. It is true. It's very true.
Why can't we talk about that?
We can.
Babies love breast milk.
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
they do. It seems like a statement of fact.
It's an absolute true statement of fact. I'm not sure why you're so shocked about it, but I appreciate, you know, that you're new to this whole thing. So yeah, they absolutely do. It's almost like they live on it, and it's, you know, sustenance for them to survive and everything.
Now that Naomi and I have a daughter, we're going to bond. And how cool is it, by the way?
Hang on. Who's going to bond? You and Naomi, you and the baby, or you and me?
No, us. And how cool is it going to be for our kids to be friends?
We're moving to Kentucky tomorrow, in fact.
That hurts, Drew.
I know it does.
That is very hurtful.
We're going to be, don't worry, I'm sure that Laura and Niall, we're going to be in the same baby group and everything else along those lines. And yes, we will be attached at the hip. I expect us will go for walks together, both of us.
Just wait until your kids get married.
Yeah. Thank
you. Ariella loves the Upa baby.
Yeah, well, it's a good quality stroller. Yeah. You know, we
have the Upa baby cruise.
We can walk down the street together, Ezzy, maybe carrying our babies in the baby Bjorns, and, you know, Dave will just drive by and pretend to not acknowledge us.
I'll be having a beer on the street.
Pointing and laughing at us, Dave?
Pretty much.
Okay. Anyways, Phil Kessel. Some bad blood in Pittsburgh, apparently, between Phil Kessel and head coach Mike Sullivan. Apparently, according to Josh Yeo of TheAthletic.com in Pittsburgh, Phil Kessel absolutely infuriated during the playoffs that he wasn't regularly deployed on a line with Evgeny Malkin, instead spending most of his time on the wing with either Riley Sheahan or Derek Brassard. Kessel had a horrendous postseason, only one goal in the entirety of the Penguins' postseason run. A lot of people say that, according to people in the Penguins organization, according to this article, Phil Kessel was pouty about the situation, and perhaps it affected his performance. Could you see that this being the beginning of the end of Phil Kessel as a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins?
If it is, guys, I think it's terribly unfortunate, because just a year ago, you know, we were talking about, you know, how great it was that Phil Kessel had won his second consecutive Stanley Cup with the Penguins after, you know, those bad years with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Not bad years statistically, but how it ended, right? And, you know, all of the fans and the media getting on Phil Kessel about his weight and his work ethic and all that. You guys remember that from, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And you mentioned, Drew, he had one goal in 12 games. He also chipped in 8 assists, but a couple of years ago, he had 10 goals. And then last year, he had 8 goals. So and obviously those goals were in more games because the Penguins went all the way to the Stanley Cup final. But one goal in 12 games was not very good. You also, you know, read and hear that Kessel was dealing with an injury.
Yes.
Towards the end of the season. Also, one thing we have to bring up, I don't think this is talked about enough. Phil Kessel has played 692 consecutive games. He's the reigning Iron Man in the NHL. I don't think a lot of people know that.
It's interesting. So you mentioned that Iron Man thing. Apparently that's a bone of contention in the Penguins organization, that last season, game 82 for the Penguins, so not this past season, the season before, game 82 was a meaningless game for the Penguins. I think they were playing in Madison Square Garden to finish the year. Mike Sullivan wanted Ian Cole and Phil Kessel to take that game off. You know, they played 81 games that year.
Sorry, someone's correcting me. It's actually Keith Yandel.
Okay.
Keith Yandel's up at 715 games.
How did somebody correct you that quickly?
But Phil Kessel is at 692. Patrick Marleau is also at 706 games.
Yeah, I agree with Drew, by the way. That was instant correction.
But the point is Kessel has played almost 700 consecutive games, a very durable player.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So Mike Sullivan went to Kessel before the end of the season last year in Madison Square Garden and said, we don't want you playing this game. Take some time off. Rest another game before the end, before the playoffs start. He went to both Ian Cole and Phil Kessel and said this. Ian Cole agreed, took that game off. Phil Kessel didn't agree, said, no, I want to play in Game 82. It means something to me to keep this streak going. And apparently that pissed off Mike Sullivan. If you read this article on theathletic.com, and it's behind a paywall, but if you're a subscriber, I strongly suggest you check it out. Josh Yeo of theathletic.com in Pittsburgh writing about it, saying Mike Sullivan has really consolidated his power in the Penguins organization. I don't want to say he's a tyrant because that's too strong of a word, but he's definitely got the authority in the organization, and players who rub him the wrong way tend to be leaving the organization. Apparently, he had a problem with Ian Cole. We know that Ian Cole left the organization and ended up with the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, he's a UFA now.
Yep. Phil Kessel, same thing. Apparently, he's doesn't see eye to eye with Mike Sullivan, and now that's why rumors of Kessel's departure from the Penguins organization are making their rounds right now.
Yeah, and I can understand, you know, Phil Kessel wants to play with Evgeny Malkin. Who wouldn't want to play with Evgeny Malkin, right? You want to play with the best players.
Sure.
Crosby and Malkin are your two best players. Kessel was playing on that third line, Drew, as you know, with Derek Brassard.
And Derek Brassard was pretty insignificant for the playoffs.
He was pretty pedestrian. He wasn't that good. And that was the reason why they didn't beat the Capitals, guys. I mean, they didn't get contributions from those third and fourth lines, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, Kessel had a bad playoffs, and he's upset that he didn't play with Malkin, Dave. And if they do decide to trade him, they better replace him and go out and get a player of equal value, because Kessel is a perennial 30 goal guy.
Yeah,
right.
You just pencil him in for 30 goals a year. He's one of the best scorers in the league, and sure, Phil Kessel, you know, some would say he's a bit of an enigmatic personality. This was a career year for him. This is a guy who had 92 points this season for the Pittsburgh Penguins. So if they're seriously thinking about trading him, they better get a boatload in return for him.
They'll get a lot in return. But I just don't know if you get an equal player in return. That's what I'm saying, right, Dave? Like, how do you get a Phil Kessel in return? I mean, they just don't grow on trees, right? So if you're going to trade him, you better get, you know, some good players in return, because he was a major reason why they won those two Stanley Cups. We talked about it. I mean, he scored 10 goals 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and he scored 8 goals in the playoffs last year. I mean, 18 goals in two playoff runs. He was a big part of that. So if you don't have Phil Kessel in your lineup, I mean, that's a big hole to fill.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch as this unfolds in the offseason. I really enjoy egomaniacal coaches, though, who feel the need to run players out of town, especially superstar players who average more than a point a game in the regular season, a guy who gets 90-plus points.
I still think there's a chance that Kessel stays.
I have to hope. If you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, if you're Sidney Crosby, if you're Evgeny Malkin, you have to hope that they work this out, whatever it is, and get him back in the fold, because the Penguins, without Phil Kessel, are not nearly as dangerous.
Well, you just said it. He had 92 points this year, 34 goals.
That would leave
and you're
going to
trade him because he has one bad playoffs?
And
look what happened with Edmonton, Drew. Well, I mean, Jordan Eberle didn't have a good playoffs last year, and they traded him, and now they regret it.
It'd be one thing if it was just a bad playoff because the coach doesn't get along with him. I mean, coaches sometimes need to park their egos and figure out a way to make things work with certain players. When we come back, we talk about the Winnipeg Jets, our good buddy Scott Billick.
Scotty B.
Of the Winnipeg Sun, NHL.com, and Pro Hockey Talk joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
A little Pearl Jam.
Thank you. Was that really necessary to interrupt me?
Except you're not going to hear it on the podcast.
Okay. Anything else? Can I go keep going with my intro here?
I've seen Pearl Jam twice, once in Fargo right. in 2003, and then I saw Pearl Jam in 2005 in Montreal.
Are you done?
Great band.
Are you done? Okay. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The man blathering on incessantly there was Ezra Ginsberg. Dave Minuke is on our far left. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From NHL.com and NBC's Pro Hockey Talk, he covers the Winnipeg Jets. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Scott Billick. Scotty, how you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing good. Thanks, Ezzy, for taking some of my airtime away.
Yeah.
Scott, are you a fan of Pearl Jam?
Yeah, I was more of a Nirvana fan than a Pearl Jam fan.
Well, all apologies, Scott.
What's the song? Da Root? Is that the one? The Sandstorm? Is that what it is?
Sandstorm.
Yeah, okay.
It's a good tune.
Yeah, we know. It takes up about 85% of your Twitter feed, I think.
Hey, man. Somebody's got to be a fan. Cool.
Scott, obviously we brought you on to talk a little bit about the Winnipeg Jets.
And grunge music in the 1990s.
You just tweeted, actually, Scott, about 3 minutes ago about Paul Stastny. Andy Strickland, a good friend of the show, covers the St. Louis Blues in St. Louis, tweeted that Stastny recently said that he would certainly consider a return to St. Louis once he hits unrestricted free agency on July 1st. Been a lot of talk about the Jets, and of course, they say all the right things publicly, that they'd be interested in bringing Stastny back if the dollars and cents they make sense and everything else. Given all the free agents the Jets need to sign, be they RFAs or be they UFAs entering next season, can you see a way that the Jets are able to fit Paul Stastny into the salary cap structure next season and going forward?
Yeah, but it'd only probably be about a year. I mean, I imagine you'd get like kind of a one-year deal, and that's what I'm no math whiz, but I tried to crunch the numbers myself, and I don't think giving him a long-term contract is something that the Jets can afford, given that they have to pay Laine, Hellebuck, and Trouba, and all these guys. Right? There's so many guys that need money now, so you look at. Does Stastny want to come in and try and take another shot at it, and give him 1 year and give him another, give Patrick Laine another year with a very capable center, on that line or not? And, give him that Laine's contract wouldn't kick in until the following year, whatever extension that he does end up signing. And I imagine that's going to be, quite a large figure. So, and you could probably sneak him in next year, given that the cap's going to move roughly to 80 and maybe even 82 million. You could probably, I haven't looked at the numbers, but I'd imagine that you can fit him into next year's plans, probably just barely, and try and give him another run and try and give, Laine another year with this mentor, and Nikolai Ehlers as well. I mean, it seemed that both those guys seem to kind of feed off of what Paul Stastny brought to the team. So I could see the Jets doing it for 1 year. I don't see it as a long-term thing. I just don't see how they can fit it in without maybe moving a part out. So who knows? Anything could happen. And then, like you said, I tweeted out that link from Strickland. I haven't actually read it yet. I mean, it just popped up right before I came on. And so, obviously Paul Stastny, I can imagine he'd want to go back to me. St. Louis is a home for him, and he's been there for a while, and obviously developed a chemistry some of those guys, and I still think he thinks that team has something left to give. I don't think he thinks that team's window is closed, and he's comfortable there. So, but I think if the Jets offered him a decent deal, I think he would take it. I think he liked his time here. I mean, he said as much, and going to the Western Conference Final is on a team that's as young as the Jets are with. And what seems to be a quite an open window for them to take a run at the cup, that's got to be enticing for an older player that hasn't won the cup yet.
Scotty, who do you think gets done first, Connor Hellebuck or Jacob Trouba, or maybe it's Josh Morrissey first on a bridge contract?
Yeah, I mean, I think Josh Morrissey would be like the first guy. If it came down to three, I mean, he'll be the guy that'll probably sign the bridge because he's just a good kid that wants to be a part of the team, I think. And he's the guy that I could see doing that. I mean, Jacob Trouba, he says on his exit day that he wants to get something done quicker rather than, or sooner rather than later. And so I don't know. I mean, I'll believe that Jacob Trouba signs here when he actually signs here, and until that happens, I'm still skeptical as I think a lot of fans are, and a lot of people in the media core here too. You want to wait and see what Jacob Trouba is actually going to do, and I think Connor Hellebuyck could be quick too. I mean, the Jets found a bona fide number one goalie who's a Vezina candidate. Now and those don't always come along, and to have a franchise goalie, I mean, that's the guy you want to sign more than anything, I would imagine. I mean, Line is going to sign, like all that's going to happen, but you want to make sure you lock down that goalie as quickly as possible. So I wouldn't be surprised if they announce a Hellebuyck contract at some point soon. But who knows? I mean, they're so tight-lipped there that it's always hard to know what they're going to do and when they're going to do it.
Well, Scott, on June 1st, I didn't wake up with a hangover, but apparently I did, because I was reading your article, and it sounds like the city of Winnipeg has quite the hangover, considering the policing costs for the whiteout parties cost $800,000. Did someone do something wrong here? Was there poor planning? How did it end up resulting in so much overtime?
Yeah, I mean, you listen, I was at the Winnipeg Police Board meeting yesterday morning covering it for The Sun, and if you listen to the Winnipeg Police, they had 3 or 4 days to, figure out a plan for a party that was, estimated to have, I don't even know how many they thought they would have for the first game there. It might have been, roughly 10,000 or so. But, I mean, it quickly grew, of course. And, at one point they estimated there was roughly, 45 to 50,000 people in that downtown area with playoff ticket holders that were at the game, plus, the 20-some-odd thousand that were outside of the game, and just people in bars and restaurants and all that stuff, like just the whole foot, but they called it the hashtag footprint of kind of how they kind of coordinated the streets and that sort of thing. Who should pay for it and that sort of thing? I mean, the police, the police haven't said that they want to, they were kind of playing the political game well. They, they're not saying anything. Obviously, the Winnipeg Police Association, the union for police officers, they feel that True North should pay for part of the bill. You kind of feel a little bit for the police here, because the Jets, and they talked about yesterday, Police Chief Jenny Smythe talked about, kind of superstition almost got in the way, because the Jets didn't want to plan anything until everything was kind of set, right? And so that didn't happen until basically the end of the season when they had it, and then they never had this kind of party in 2015. So police were trying to look at best practices. So was True North. So was Economic Development Winnipeg. Everybody was trying to look at, how to do this right. But I mean, when you're asking a police officers to, or a police organization to police this event, make sure everybody's safe, which by all accounts so far, there were no major incidents, which is, a great thing. And kudos to the Winnipeg Police for keeping it that way. But when you're asking for upwards of 250 officers at one point, which was around 20% of how many people are, police officers in the city, and then you have to police the rest of the city along with that, and not disrupt service to, major crime things that might happen around the city. I mean, you're asking a lot, and you're asking a lot of guys to come in and do overtime. And so, and True North plans the party, True North Economic Development Winnipeg plans the party, and they need somebody to make sure people are safe. So, viewers and readers and listeners and all that, they can, make up their own conclusions on who should have to flip the bill here. But, you'd think that, so this money doesn't have to come out of taxpayers' pockets to pay the overtime, maybe True North will pick up a little bit of the tab, and we're going to find more about that out on Monday when they actually released the revenue and the figures and all the stuff that they made throughout the, three rounds in their playoff run.
Scott Billick, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott is with NHL.com. He's with the Winnipeg Sun. He's with NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets and their offseason and the season that was for the Jets here in Winnipeg.
Scotty, we were talking about this earlier in the show. Do you think there's any chance that the Jets would buy out Steve Mason?
It's funny. I mean, we were talking about this. I was talking with a couple of reporters on exit day interviews, and just, would they consider it? And I don't know. I mean, you would think it could be an option, because I don't think trading is an option. I mean, who's going to take a guy that was injured all year and with the contract that he has and is likely not going to be a starting goaltender somewhere else? I mean, there might be a desperate team or two out there, but I just don't know if they can flip him in a trade even for who knows what. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me that they would trade him. So, yeah, perhaps they could buy him out. But, I mean, part of it, too, is, like, you know, Connor Hellebuyck talked about, Steve Mason talked about, they talked about how Connor Hellebuyck had, you know, a bit of a mentor this year to kind of look up to and lean on in certain times. And he didn't have that in last season, right? And, you know, Andre Pavlik was sent down to the Moose, and it was just kind of him and Michael Hutchinson for most of the year. And, you know, what's Michael Hutchinson going to teach Connor Hellebuyck? You know, Connor Hellebuyck's played more NHL games, I think, at this point now. So it's just, I think the possibility is always there. I mean, especially if they want to clear some space and save a little money. I think it was around $2.5 million they would save on the cap. I can't remember. I'd have to look at the figures again, but, you know, I don't want to say that it will happen because I don't know, but I think it's a possibility, but I'm not sure it's a strong one.
Scott, we'll let you go on this last question. Next season, it looks like the Jets are going to line up on the left side of their defense with Josh Morrissey, certainly as the top pairing, and then Dmitry Kulikov and either Ben Sherrod or Joe Morrow. If that's the Jets' left side defense entering the season next year, are you okay with that, or is that an area of concern that you think might be a weakness for the squad?
Yeah, I mean, if Dmitry Kulikov can stay healthy, I think you're not as worried as you would be. But I mean, given what happened this year and this kind of nagging back injury that I have, I mean, you wonder if they would go out and maybe look for, you know, that third pairing guy. I think Joe Morrow deserves a chance. I think Joe Morrow came in and did a good job and was a very serviceable third pairing defenseman. And, you know, Ben Sherrod, you know, he was good at times and struggled at times. And, you know, that's kind of the MO for Ben Sherrod. And, you know, I think they could look at it. I think, you know, they got to take a hard look at, you know, what's going on with Kulikov, what needs to be done. Is rest this offseason going to help him? You know, is this thing going to keep coming? Because if not, I mean, you don't want to go into the season with kind of this question mark. And then if he gets injured again, you know, gets hit the wrong way or, you know, even takes the stride the wrong way or whatever, I mean, then you're down and then you have this problem and it's not so easy to fix in the season. So, you know, do you want to bring in a guy now that can help out and maybe even be, you know, on that third pairing or whatever? So, I think it's concerning with the caveat that it's based on how healthy Dmitry Kulikov is, and if they can forecast at all, you know, if he's going to stay that way and stay, you know, without these lingering back issues, and that he can put that behind him, then yeah, I think they'd be all right with that. But I think, you know, if that's not the case, they'll have to be looking around July 1st there.
Scott Billick covers the Winnipeg Jets for NHL.com. You can also read his work in the Winnipeg Sun and on NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. Scotty, appreciate it this morning. Thanks for joining us, bud, and our apologies for Ezzy rambling incoherently at the start of the segment.
Yeah, anytime, fellas. Thank you.
Take care, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
When we come back, Ilya Kovalchuk is coming back to the NHL, barring something unforeseen. Where is he going to end up? We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I was talking maybe a three-year deal. I don't think there's any chance the Rangers are going to sign him to a three-year deal. They'd like to do a one-year deal. Kovalchuk would love three. My guess is he ends up agreeing to a two-year deal. Can't be signed till July 1, but can be agreed to April 15th. I don't think any strong reason to believe that he'll end up somewhere other than New York, but...
It wasn't the point to come back and win a cup, though. They don't look like they're...
TSN's Bob McKenzie on with Jay and Dan. That was back in April, when it seemed inevitable that Ilya Kovalchuk was going to be signing with the New York Rangers. Now that we're about 6 weeks after that, it's not as inevitable as it was back in April. It'll be interesting to see where Ilya Kovalchuk can sign. He can negotiate now. Of course, he can't formally sign an agreement just yet. Or he can now, I guess, because it is after April 15th, and he is 35 years old and over, and given the free agency rules that are in existence for that circumstance, he is available to sign. But as for where he's going to go, time will tell. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Really enjoyed that Donnell Rawlings show the other night.
I was going to get you. I was going to say, Donnell Rawlings is at Rumors. You know him as Ashy Larry from Chappelle's Show. Mr. Ginsburg is now banned from Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club because he had tickets to go see Donnell Rawlings.
Well, no, I won tickets.
You won tickets.
From the Rumors Instagram page from back in April.
Right, and you didn't show up and you didn't let them know, so you're now on the banned list from Rumors as they beaked you on Twitter earlier this week, and you're like, I just had a baby 6 hours ago. I can't go to a comedy club.
6 days ago.
Whatever it was, it's not important. Facts are not relevant to my argument.
Drew, I have a newborn at home. If I told Naomi I was going to Rumors to watch Donnell Rawlings, she would have literally killed
yeah, you wouldn't have had a home to return to, as you would now be kicked out of your house and your wife would have nothing to do with you.
I saw Rawlings a couple years ago. He's hilarious.
He is hilarious.
I actually went with Remus.
Ah, how was that date?
It was good.
How do you feel now that
he got a little bit cranky because the show was going on, a little bit longer,
right,
and he had a 10:30 bedtime, but
how do you feel now that your life is going to revolve around your daughter and no longer having to spend quality time with Remus? That's a pretty good trade, I would say.
Well, I love Remo, but I mean,
you love your daughter.
Spending time with
more.
My daughter is the best.
Yeah, exactly. Remus is going to get bumped down on the power rankings of Ezzy's friends.
I think
for
everybody
is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Everyone is. Anyways, Donnell Rawlings is at Rumors. Two shows left tonight. RumorsComedyClub.com. Just a few tickets remaining. Don't be an Ezzy. Get your tickets right now and be sure to show up. Ilya Kovalchuk.
I probably should have given those tickets away.
I was just going to say, you should have let them know or something.
I'll be honest. I completely forgot.
I know you did. It's okay. In any event, Ilya Kovalchuk.
Can't sign until July 1st.
Until July 1st, yeah. Pardon me. He can negotiate now. He can't sign until July 1st.
J.P. Barrie is his agent.
J.P. Barrie is his agent. And there's talk, if you believe what Darren Dreger wrote in this year's Dreger report, that Ilya Kovalchuk is looking for a contract similar to what Patrick Marleau got with the Toronto Maple Leafs last summer, which was a 3-year deal at $6.25 million per season. Are you giving a 36-year-old Ilya Kovalchuk, 3-year contract and over $6 million per year? I'm not. That's a buyout-proof contract. You can't get out of that contract because it's an over 35 contract.
Yeah, and I'm not giving him that contract because he's 35, not 36, Drew.
There you go. Sorry. My apologies.
No, but let's be honest here. I mean, Ilya Kovalchuk is not the same player he was 5 years ago. And, he was still a point-per-game player the last time he played in the NHL with the Devils, and obviously he won the Olympic gold in February with Olympic athletes from Russia, mm-hmm. So he finally got that elusive Olympic gold, and now he wants a Stanley Cup. And most teams, I think, Drew, would like to sign him to a 1-year deal, but he wants a 2 or 3 year deal. And you're not going to be able to get Kovalchuk for $1 million a year. I mean, he's going to want some money. He's probably going to want similar money to Alex Radulov.
That's the name I was just going to say.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Dallas makes a lot of sense for me, guys. I mean, Dallas needs scoring help, right? They probably need to add a second-line center. That's why John Tavares' name has been rumored to possibly be maybe signing with Dallas. Dallas makes a lot of sense. The L.A. Kings make a lot of sense. The L.A. Kings, we know, couldn't score goals. They just couldn't score on Marc-Andre Fleury, but they also had trouble scoring during the regular season.
Yeah.
Matt Larkin had a good article for the Hockey News. I don't know if you guys read it,
yes,
but he had top five destinations for Ilya Kovalchuk. Dallas was on there, L.A. was on there, Florida, Boston. I don't think Boston really makes a lot of sense because it looks like Rick Nash is going to stay in Boston, or there's a good chance that Rick Nash stays in Boston. Florida makes a lot of sense. He doesn't have to be a top six forward for you, but maybe you have Ilya Kovalchuk on the third line, fourth line wing. He gives you some scoring depth. I don't think Ilya Kovalchuk is a 30-goal scorer at the NHL level anymore, but he could probably score 20 to 25.
If you're Kovalchuk, Dave, aren't you going to the place that gives you the best chance to win a Stanley Cup? I mean, that's why you're coming back to the NHL. Maybe you're coming back. I mean, the money, maybe there's a little more money with the NHL than there is in the KHL. I'm not sure what he's getting in the KHL. But if you're coming back to the NHL at this stage in your career, aren't you doing it to try and win a Stanley Cup?
So what you're suggesting is he's going to return to the team that drafted him, the Winnipeg Jets, technically the Atlanta Thrashers. Well, no, I mean, I think so, and that's been his stated goal, Drew, is not necessarily he's coming because he wants the financial, you know, money that he will make in the NHL, but instead the, you know, certainty of trying to win a Stanley Cup. So, I mean, to me, if you're Ilya Kovalchuk and you want to win a Stanley Cup, you're really looking at contenders, really. And so maybe you're willing to take a little bit of a shorter term, a two-year deal. You know, there's no way he's signing a one-year deal. He wants a minimum 2 years, would be my guess.
Oh, and Radulov signed a one-year deal when he came back to, sure. to the
house. Sure. I mean, I look, anything's possible, but the reality is I think, like, whatever, if your stated goal is to win, then, yeah, you're willing to take
then
that
contract.
Then
you're not signing with the Rangers.
Right, well, that's what I mean. Like, you know, I know you might have this idea, like, oh, I'm comfortable there. I know the city, there's that fit within that New York area.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, you can fit anywhere for a short period of time with which that'll, you know, give you an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup.
We heard from Bob McKenzie back in April to start the segment. He was on TSN 1050 yesterday, and this is what he had to say about the future of Ilya Kovalchuk and now where the suitors lie.
Most teams for Kovalchuk are going to want to give him a one-year deal. Kovalchuk's going to want a three-year deal. I think we can see where this is going. For a lot of teams, it'll end up being, you know what, if we want him, we're going to have to give him a two-year deal, at least a two-year deal, and he is going to get more than $6 million a year. And so there's no doubt in my mind on that front. And, you know, somebody will pay him. Now, if you want to go to if you're Kovalchuk and you want to go to a team that has a chance to win the Cup, then you may have to modify your term. I know, like the New York Rangers, for example, even though they're in a soft rebuild, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that they'd be interested in Kovalchuk, and I think Kovalchuk has had significant interest in maybe playing for the Rangers. But I don't believe the Rangers, given their current situation in terms of the soft rebuild that they're doing, want to give a player of that age a three-year deal. So, you know, can they saw off it too? And those become the questions that the player has to ask himself and ultimately decide where he wants to go. Because the teams that can usually offer the most money in the most term are the teams that are the furthest away from winning a cup. And if you're 35 years old, I mean, what's the reason to come back to the National Hockey League? I would assume as much as it's for money in term, you want a chance to contend.
That's TSN's Bob McKenzie talking on TSN 1050 yesterday about Ilya Kovalchuk and his return to the NHL.
Another team, Drew, that makes a lot of sense is Montreal, right? Montreal has a history of signing players who played in the Continental Hockey League, Alex Radulov.
Sure.
I mean, the Canadians need scoring help, right?
Right.
And to Dave's point, Ilya Kovalchuk wants to come back and win a Stanley Cup, but if he signs a 2 or 3 year deal, he doesn't necessarily have to sign with a team who's a Stanley Cup contender right now, right? And the Montreal Canadiens are obviously not a Stanley Cup contender right now, mm-hmm. but I don't necessarily agree that, you know, he has to sign with one of the top teams like whoever, Tampa Bay or Vegas or a team like that. Vegas is obviously an option, but
Vegas makes sense.
There aren't going to be as many teams after Kovalchuk as there are going to be after Tavares. I think there's going to be, clearly, you know, 10 to 15 teams after Tavares, whereas Kovalchuk, you're probably going to have, what, 3 or 4, maybe 5 teams after Kovalchuk. But to me, Montreal makes a lot of sense, too.
It's an interesting one. I mean, you got a guy who, it's a contract that you can't get out from under if you're an NHL team when you sign him to it. So if all of a sudden he's not worth anything that you're paying for him, if you're getting $6 plus million a season, that can be a real albatross on your salary cap structure. But it's a guy who also can, if he's anything like he was when he left the NHL or like he was in the KHL when he was still scoring 30, 35 goals a season, he can be a real boon to your team and maybe that secondary scoring that you might be a desperate team like the Dallas Stars might be looking for.
You have to have the cap room, guys.
Sure.
Because you're signing Ilya Kovalchuk to a $5 or $6 million a year deal to basically be a second or third line winger.
Sure.
But he just can't keep up. He's not as fast as he once was. He was never the fastest player.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't see a team that's up against the salary cap signing him. And the LA Kings are a team that is up against the salary cap, right? Same thing goes with the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? They don't have tons of cap room.
If they get rid of Phil Kessel, they can sign him. You might even be able to swap Kessel out and bring Kovalchuk in as a straight trade. Their salaries would be pretty close to identical.
Well, and I thought of Tampa Bay, too, because Tampa Bay, they have you know, several Russian players, Nikita Kucherov, Andrei Vasilevsky. I mean, makes a lot of sense there, but
Sergachev.
I don't think they have the cap room.
It'll be interesting. He's one of those sort of, he's not at the John Tavares level, but he's in that second tier of free agents to watch when July 1st comes around. When we come back, Dave Maloney is going to join us. Dave is a analyst for the New York Rangers. We're going to talk about the Rangers' new head coach and their offseason plans. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Big Daddy Ezzie Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Dave Maloney. Dave is the New York Rangers radio analyst. He joins us now to talk about the Rangers' hiring of David Quinn as their new head coach and the Rangers' offseason plans in general. Dave, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for calling. How are you doing?
Doing very well, Dave. Always appreciate you giving us your time to talk about the Rangers. They hired their new head coach in David Quinn about a week or 10 days ago. He obviously comes from the NCAA ranks where he was a successful head coach at Boston University. Not a ton of NHL coaching experience, be it as a certainly none as a head coach, a little bit as an assistant coach. Did you think this was the right hire at the right time for the New York Rangers?
Well, I'm not in the position to pass judgment on whether it's right or wrong, right? I mean, this is a little bit outside the box for an original six franchise. There's a big collegiate presence to what the Rangers have on the roster. And certainly, the collegiate route is certainly developing more and more potential NHL players. I think from a standpoint specific to David Quinn, when you look at Jeff Gorton has a history in Boston, Chris Drury has a history at BU, Brian Leach, who's involved with the Rangers management, also the great Ranger defenseman, he goes a way back with David Quinn. So there were a number of angles where it seemed fit, and then you throw into that paradigm the fact that it sounds more and more like the way guys learn now, it's a lot more hands-on. You know, as specific as watching these younger guys come to the bench, and a lot of times they go right to the iPad, right? So long gone are the days, it seems anyway, and I'm not saying, you know, the pendulum should be one way or the other. It seems to be swinging more and more of how this generation of player now, how you get the message across and how they hear things. And it sounds like, you know, you hear this, you know, David Quinn is 51 years old. He's not exactly a young guy from that standpoint, but certainly comes from an extensive collegiate background. And I think the Rangers went a little bit outside the box, and I think that just follows through on what they did come down the trade deadline. Early February, they announced what they were going to do, and they went ahead and done it. So I do give Jeff Gorton and Chris Drury the kudos for kind of going in the direction where they think it's going to fit, and time will tell whether, yes, indeed, it's the right hire or not.
You know, Dave, you mentioned Quinn's collegiate background, and further to your point, players like Kevin Hayes, Chris Kreider, Jimmy Vesey, Brady Shea, Kevin Shattenkirk. I mean, the Rangers have a lot of players that came up through that NCAA system. Is that one of the major reasons why David Quinn was hired? Because he's worked with so many players at the NCAA college level, and he's able to relate to them maybe better than other head coaches?
Yeah, you know what, Anthony, I don't think you can discount that thought, right? Until I get an opportunity to really talk to the new head coach, who really won't know, you know, get more of a feel about who he is and how he goes about his business. But certainly I think it's easy to kind of come to that conclusion, right? And personally speaking, as a true blue Canadian, I think the Rangers' issue is we don't have enough Canadians on a club, but that's probably a little too much like Don Cherry. But in the meantime, no, I don't think you can discount that. I really don't. And I think it gets back to that way of reaching those types of players. There's a particular style, and it's funny, though. I think the Rangers, until you get a chance to kind of see how he lays out his plan. We're coming off a regime with Alain Vigneault and a little older group where at the end of the day, they rarely practice. Between the, and I know, I'm not sure that that's only the Ranger franchise, given the mandatory days off, the CBA and the travel. So when I hear this kind of mandate to teach players, I think I'm like, well, when are you going to do that? You know, you start camp, and then I think the Rangers' first exhibition game is 3 days into camp. So there's not a lot of teaching time. So I suppose finding, you know, ways and methods to kind of get your message through to this next generation of player on a limited amount of time where when you look at the collegiate schedule, they have two games on the weekend, right? So they practice for 4 days and they have games on the weekend. That is not the case in the National Hockey League. So it'll be interesting to see how Quinn comes out of that environment into the reality of the National Hockey League on a day-to-day basis.
You know, Dave, there's been a lot of talk about the soft rebuild in New York. How does Ilya Kovalchuk, how would Ilya Kovalchuk possibly fit into that?
Well, I think he'd be a great fit if you could get him on the right term is the issue, I think, with Kovalchuk. And I think, you know, the money's not the issue. And I think if the Rangers or any team could get Kovalchuk in their, on their roster, by all accounts, he's a wonderful teammate. He certainly seems to have that type of world-class skill that ages well. So there's no question that, and if you're in this state of transition, like any team, you still need guys that can play. It's fine and dandy to go young, and you want to do this and that. And if you're a coach and they're going young, you better have about a 10-year contract. So I just think that absolutely, I believe Kovalchuk's a fit from a Ranger standpoint, given where they're at. The question to me is what would the term be, and is Kovalchuk willing to take a little less money to go wherever he might be an immediate fit?
Dave Maloney, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is a radio analyst for the New York Rangers. Dave, this upcoming NHL draft is a key one for the Rangers. They have 7 picks within the first 3 rounds. They have 3 picks in the first round, 9th overall, which is their own, and then they have 2 later first-round picks that originally belonged to the Bruins and the Lightning. Is this a scenario that the Rangers, you know, are going to take the best player available, or are they looking to shore up a certain area in particular?
You know what? That's a good question. I think I'd answer this question because I have been asked. First and foremost, the Rangers are at the position in a draft that they have not been in for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to have the flexibility and cap space when you go into July 1 to do a number of different things. You know, you've got picks, you've got restricted free agents and guys like Spooner and Nemestikov. And players like that, that gives you the flexibility to either move around in the draft, find if that player becomes available. So I would answer your question as far as the draft first that way. Now, when it comes to a player or a position, what you talk about from a Rangers standpoint is every deal they made for a younger player at the deadline talked about character. Talked about that compete and compete with an edge. Those things, I think Alain Vigneault had a particular style, right? He was pretty hands-off, left the room to the room's own kind of thing. And yet I think there was a significant lack of bite from a Ranger standpoint. So to me, when I look like a kid like Kachuk, Brady Kachuk, I'm not sure he'll be there when the Rangers pick at 9. But that type of personality, I think the Rangers desperately need. They need some bite from their top players. And you can talk about the game going the way it's going as far as skill and speed. And your team, the Jets, have a tremendous complement of skill, speed, and bite. And you look at the two teams in the finals, particularly Washington and Vegas, not taking a back seat when you've got to compete. So to me, that's an area where this franchise needs to be a little bit deeper.
Dave, do we have any idea when David Quinn is going to name his assistant coaches?
Do not. No, I know Lindy Ruff, by my understanding, is still in a little bit of limbo as far as whether he's in or out. But no, I don't. There hasn't been any inkling. The Rangers certainly had their organizational meetings prior to hiring David Quinn. They'll go through the draft and they'll have their prospects camp right after the draft. My suspicions are there's probably something underway, although Chris Drury's basically one of his responsibilities running that prospect camp. So, no, I have not heard. You would think that somewhere on the staff he might need a little bit of NHL experience somewhere along the line. But that remains to be seen yet.
You know, Dave, I asked you about the soft rebuild in New York, and one of the things that sometimes teams need to do is draw on their AHL teams. Are there any prospects that are coming up from the Hartford Wolf Pack that can kind of buoy the New York Rangers this season?
Any prospect outside of Bouniemes, who started the season in Hartford, got recalled. I think he ended up playing 24 games. Then he had a bit of a concussion issue when he got sent back. The prospect, I think, that of all, so they trade for O'Gara. John Gilmore got brought up. He was a free agent signing, actually drafted by Calgary, and Calgary didn't sign him. He's a defenseman. He came up at the end of the season. The one guy out of all the young guys that either came via trade or from Hartford is Pionk on the blue line. He looks like the one guy. They can say, okay, it looks like he may have a career. Georgiev, you have the goaltender. He had an opportunity to play, played pretty well. He might be the second guy in the franchise. But that's another thing that the Rangers, of course, Hedel and Anderson last year's two picks who finished the season with the Rangers. I think at some point there's an expectation that they're going to be participants here moving forward, whether it's next fall or not. I think that's the thing. I mean, you can look at all the good teams now, right? And you know, Winnipeg's a good example. A lot of top picks, well drafted, but it takes time. You know, now you look at Scheifele as a legitimate player. Truba is a legitimate player. Ehlers, you know, I mean, it takes time. You fall in love with an 18 or 19-year-old, and you realize that's the very, very opening crack in the window of an NHL career. Now it does it good. So, Neil Pionk, who was a free agent signing a year ago, came up when the makeover happened in mid-February, played in the World Championships, the American team. He looks like the one guy so far. You can say, you know what, I think there might be a career there.
Dave, you just mentioned Neil Pionk. He's got 1 year left on his contract. Kevin Shattenkirk's got 3 years left on his contract. Same thing goes for associate captain Mark Stahl. Brady Shea's a pending RFA, but I think you'd agree the Rangers are going to want to sign Brady Shea long-term. He's a great defenseman. If you're Jeff Gorton, are you going to be active in the trade market or via free agency to acquire a top-four defenseman?
Well, that's what I mentioned before, right? I think the franchise is in a position they haven't been in a long while, where you have the flexibility to move some picks or move prospects, and you've got cap space. You know, it's interesting you mentioned Mark Stahl. Over the course of the season, Stahl, in his very quiet way, and I know there was a lot of upheaval, he might have been as good as they had back there. And the point is, you still need somebody to play. Would they be in the market for a top four? Absolutely. Shattenkirk, big signing a year ago. And I know Kevin for a long time. You know, I've known him since he was a kid. And when it comes to being a top pair, Kevin doesn't defend well enough. And I think we saw that. Now he had towards the mid-season knee issues, didn't finish the season. But he's got to come back in a little better condition and be a better player for this team. And of course, he goes right for Quinn. So, yes, the Rangers are probably one of, 20 teams that certainly would like to add a top four defenseman into play. So if I'm the Rangers, you look at a franchise like Calgary, St. Louis, maybe even Carolina, teams that it looked like they got some depth in the blue line and didn't make the playoffs. Now, are they going to look to move a body or two? So, yes, I would believe they're in the market for a little help experience and depth-wise up top of the blue line.
Dave Maloney is a New York Rangers radio analyst. Dave, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us to discuss the Rangers offseason, and hope you have a great one yourself.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good luck. Thanks for calling.
Take care, Dave. Thanks again. Yeah. When we come back, one final segment, we put a bow on this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Alex Ovechkin making an impact in the Stanley Cup final, scoring in Game 2. Game 3 of the series, of course, goes tonight in Washington, now down to a best of 5 after they split the first two games in Vegas. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. Before we talk about Game 3 of the Golden Knights Capital Series, I just want to give a plug for a charity bike ride that I'm participating in tomorrow, and I have done for the last number of years on behalf of Illegal Curve. I'm pleased to represent us in the 20th annual Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Starts tomorrow morning. There's a number of different rides available. If you're a real cyclist, there's a 65-kilometer ride. I'm not doing that one, believe it or not. I'm going to do the 25-kilometer ride that Ezzy and I did a couple years back.
I can't even count to 65.
That's true. It's a long, long bike ride. I'm not a little too long for my little legs. But tomorrow morning, bright and early, I think it starts at 10 a.m., we're going to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Cycle on Life.
It's supposed to be better weather tomorrow.
Better weather tomorrow. 25-kilometer ride that'll take us from the Riverview Health Center all throughout sort of the Riverview area and the Wildwood Park area. We get to the football stadium, to IG Field, where there's a halfway point. We turn around. It's a great cause. We're raising money for the Riverview Health Center Alzheimer and Dementia units. They're looking to upgrade the units. They've raised a ton of money over the last 20 years, and I'm just thrilled to be participating in this event, as I've done for the last, 5-7 years, something like that. I'm pleased to report I've raised my targeted goal. I'm up over $1,600.
Awesome.
So if you guys feel the need and want to contribute, by all means, I appreciate that. I'll send out a link and some more information about the cycle on my Twitter feed, at ICDrew. Maybe I'll even retweet it from the Illegal Curve account.
We participated a couple of years ago.
Absolutely, yep. We did.
We were on the Bomber alumni team.
No, we weren't. We were on the Illegal Curve team.
Oh.
Yeah, it was me and you and Richard Pollock was supposed to participate, and he raised some money, and then 2 days before he reminded us that he didn't know how to ride a bike, and so he just was there with moral support. But Ezzy and I had a lovely Sunday morning bike ride together.
I remember we had a little pit stop at BDI.
Yes, you get BDI is one of the sponsors of the event, so you get a certificate or a gift card to get a nice ice cream treat as you're doing your cycle. So that's
you crushed, of course, two Goog specials.
Two Googs, and I was not feeling too well after that to make the bike ride back to the Riverview. But I powered through and did it. So, again, if you're looking for more information, if you're in the Wildwood Park area, the Riverview area of the city, and you see a bunch of cyclists tomorrow, it's the Riverview Health Center Foundation 20th Annual Cycle on Life. Thrilled to be participating in that. Just a couple minutes to go on this Saturday morning here on the program, guys. What are you looking for in Game 3, Game 4 of the series between the Golden Knights and the Washington Capitals as the series shifts back to Washington?
Well, it's probably going to be another close game, right? Because the first game was a one-goal game minus the empty netter.
Yeah.
And last game, obviously, was a one-goal game. Alex Tuck almost tied it up. But this is what I'm looking for. Washington has not been good at home in the playoffs.
It's true.
They have a record of 4-5.
Under 500.
And this is a stat that has really stood out to me. The Vegas Golden Knights have a record of 3-0 and have scored 12 goals in games following a loss in the playoffs. They are 3-0 in game threes,
sure,
including winning twice when the series was tied at 1, including the series against the Jets in the Western Conference final.
And the series before that against the San Jose Sharks, of course.
Golden Knights are 6-2 on the road in the playoffs. So, I mean, this is, I think, the biggest game by far of the playoffs for both teams. If you're Washington, obviously, you want to go up 2-1. If you're Vegas, you want to go up 2-1. Mm-hmm. And that's the case in any series, but the Vegas Golden Knights have gotten contributions from so many different players along the way. I mean, whether it's, you know, a guy like
Ryan
Alex Tuck or Ryan Reeves, yeah, or Thomas Nosek or Thomas Tatar in the Jets series. The Marchessault line was shut down in game two, Riley Smith and William Karlsson. So I'm looking for a bounce back game from that line. And also, I think Vegas has to make it a lot tougher on Braden Holtby. Because even though they peppered 39 shots on Holtby in game two, I didn't think they made it hard enough on Holtby. He was excellent in game two. And obviously, Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, hasn't had a very good start to this series. So I'm expecting a bounce back game from Fleury, but it should be a close one. And, you know, it could come down to a fantastic save at the end, or, you know, maybe we see the first OT of the series.
As it did, of course, in game two with that fantastic save by Braden Holtby. If the Capitals win tonight on home ice, this would be the first time all playoffs that the Golden Knights trailed in a series after game three. They, of course, trailed to the Jets one game to nothing, but this would be the first time that they really faced some adversity a little later in a series. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our guests, Dave Maloney, Scott Billick, Guy Flaming. We were also joined, of course, by Stephen Wino of the Associated Press and Ken Danico. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. Also available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Rory McGoran doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Big Daddy, Ezzie Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
As long as we stick together, the team will be all right.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.